Welcome to the Center in the City podcast. I'm your host, Wade Brill, and during this series, I'll be interviewing various thought leaders, wellness experts, and humans on how they practice sustainable self-care and mindfulness. We'll get real and raw, talk about the light and the shadow side of self-care and mindfulness, and how we can actually stay centered amid the chaos and the hustle and bustle of our modern day world. So settle in and get centered. This podcast episode is brought to you by Centered in the City, a virtual on-demand self-care and mindfulness platform with different meditations, journaling prompts, nourishing recipes, and Pilates flows, all designed to support you feeling calm, focused, and energized as you live your life in this modern day world. For more information, head on over to centeredinthecity.com and claim your 7-day free trial. Welcome back to the Centered in the City podcast. I am so glad you are here. Today, I get to interview one of my Seattle female lady crushes. I've known Ashley's work and have seen Ashley's work since I moved here to Seattle, and I am so over the moon to have her on the podcast. In this conversation, we talk about our love for food and cooking and play and creativity and being mindful and intentional with our ingredients and our hands. And oh, it's just such a soulful episode. I can't wait for you to listen to it. I left so inspired and excited to, you know, dabble into the world of foraging a little bit more. So a little bit about Ashley. Ashley is a Seattle-based award-winning food writer and photographer. She's the author of 3 cookbooks, Date Night In, Let's Stay In, and Rooted, which is her newest book. Ashley is the host and co-creator of the James Beard-nominated series called Kitchen Unnecessary. Ashley is a graduate of Seminary of the Wild through the Center for Wild Spirituality and a certified nature and forest therapy guide. You can check out Ashley's full bio in the show notes, as well as links to her books and resources. Wherever you're listening to today's podcast episode, maybe on a walk, in your kitchen as you prepare a meal, or maybe just driving in your car, I welcome you to settle in and let's get centered. Ashley, welcome to the Center in the City podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you. I feel like you are such a Seattle icon, especially since when I moved to Seattle over 10 years ago and started to get introduced into the female entrepreneur community. So just thank you for being such a staple of what it is to be a creative leader in this culture.
Amazing. I appreciate hearing that. I feel like Seattle and the Northwest in general just has this very like convivial, communal, especially in with women, I find is that we just like collectively want to hold one another up. So I've been held up by many before me. So I appreciate hearing that.
Love to kick us off by having you share with us, what does being centered mean to you?
That is a wonderful question. It's something that I strive for. And what first comes to mind is just being present. Like I immediately just having asked that question, I immediately just am drawn into release exterior distractions and allow myself to have a moment to just remind myself that this is where I am and to be with that. I always love the Jon Kabat-Zinn, although I don't think it was his original idea, but the title of one of his books, Wherever You Go, There You Are. And in that book, he also talks about like when you're stirring the pot, stir the pot. I think of that often while I'm cooking, of course. I think that's what comes to mind.
That phrase, wherever you go, there you are, sticks with me all the time as well. It's like one of my favorite go-to mindfulness books in my little bookshelf behind me. I love hearing you bring that in. What inspired you to get into cooking? Like, what was your entry point?
Yeah, I always say that while I don't necessarily have, Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say I don't have tons of memories of like cooking with my mother or grandmother that you so often hear, but that, you know, and then I start to say that and I immediately have memories that pop up. But I think the biggest gift that I got from them is not being afraid in the kitchen. My mom always was sort of an intuitive cook, not using a recipe on a daily basis. I mean, she would use recipes for like special occasion meals. But for just the day-to-day, she would just kind of whip things up and taste and adjust. And so that's sort of how I learned that way. It's like, this is just how we do it. But I loved playing around with food and never had this, like, I still to this day have this mindset. If I see something that I want, I'm like, oh, I can make that. And so I think like I was 10 when I asked for a pasta maker for Christmas, and I wanted one of those like Ron Popeil automatic pasta makers because I loved watching infomercials. But my grandma got me one of those like instant Italian, or not instant, but like those hand, that silver hand crank that you like attach to the edge of your counter or whatever. And I was kind of bummed. I was like, oh man, this isn't exactly what I wanted. And I have never been without one of those since then. I love it so, so very much. So I remember one of my first attempts at making pasta for my parents. I would play a restaurant with them and I would like write up the menu. And one time I invited them to go sit outside in one of our gardens and I made this like garden inspired meal and I made pasta for them. And it was basically just a bowl of like floury mush. I don't remember how it happened, but I feel like the pasta just like disintegrated. But I was like presented it to them and bless them. They were like, this is so good. But I mean, I was a 10-year-old making, attempting to make homemade pasta. So I always had that no fear in the kitchen, this idea that whatever I wanted, I could somehow find a way to make, even if it didn't turn out perfectly. But it really was my studying abroad in Italy. I was studying art in Italy, and it was my first time I experienced a culture that really centers itself around the table and has such an appreciation and respect for food and ingredients that everything tasted so good. It was like I was tasting things for the first time, and things that I, you know, like tomatoes and Parmesan, which I've had, but nothing like I had in Italy, right? And I loved that everything shuts down in the middle of the day to come together around the table. And so that's where all my limited funds were going as a college student. But I loved wandering the farmers market every week and gathering like a hunk of Parmesan that I would sort of like nibble on all throughout the week. And I fell in love with arugula and figs that I would pluck off the trees and persimmons and all. Yeah. It was just an incredible experience that totally opened me up. And then it was kind of coming back from that, and at this time in my life where it's like, okay, what do you want to do with your life? And I was studying art and I was planning on being a high school art teacher. And then it sort of hit me that some people actually make a career in food. It's like, this is amazing. So I sort of deviated my path a little bit and followed that curiosity to now it's, you know, however many years later, over 20, and I still am so curious about food.
Wow, I love hearing that. And you know, it's interesting. I've had a spiritual teacher once tell me that what you typically played as a child influences or is very much linked to what you become as an adult. So it's very interesting to hear that this, like these strong memories of your childhood being fearless in the kitchen, playing, having curiosity of food and even like being interested by infomercial kitchen gadgets, right? Like how that comes back to your adult lives and the gifts that you give to the world now and the curiosities you still have.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. I had someone say that to me too, and I almost use that now as a marker, when I'm like, okay, now what's next? Like I revert back to that childhood age where I do feel like there's this window that we are almost like our truest selves. It's the closest embodiment of our soul, I feel like, that we can get. And then the world sort of like shapes us and shifts us, and our loyal soldiers that are trying to protect us, or our ego is like, oh no, we need to behave this way, we need to do this, and for whatever reasons, trauma and life circumstances just like starts to kind of like crush that a bit, and then we need to come back to that. And yeah, I think so often, and for me, the constant is always like creating something. Like that is just the constant. That was my favorite thing to do in that age range. I mean, my best childhood friend and I would just hours and hours of just like drawing and painting and beading and all the things that are still an absolute constant in my life, and where I feel most me is when I'm making something. And it's, I talk to my kids about that too, of like, they're all teenagers now, but how telling that age is.
Yeah, and that natural human gift of creation, doing something with our hands, and how a lot of us in our busy human lives start to lose that or don't make as much space for it because we fill it with work. I think part of even with coaching clients, a lot of the time, it's even getting back to that place of creation. Like, I know when I've started to write and tap back into it, this like whole new level of connection to myself has opened up. So I love what you're pointing to here around getting creative. And you shared something that I hear a lot with people that there's like a fear of getting into the kitchen. There's a fear of I'm not going to do it right, or I need a recipe to hold on to. And I too grew up in a household that loved food. My mom also was a great cook who just tasted her way through adding things. And I really feel like it gave me the confidence too to just step in, get curious. Does this need more salt, garlic? Like, what senses are being evoked in the kitchen? And helped me let my senses lead instead of my mind. I'm curious for you, as you have evolved to really get in touch with more of nature and how seasonal cooking and cooking outside on a fire. Like, for me, that isn't, you're an expander because studying abroad in Argentina, mostly it's men who are leading and tending to the fire, who are grilling. I mean, I would say even in American culture too, they're the ones that are grilling in front of the flame, managing the heat, dealing with the meat, these like very masculine things. And to see you out in nature, owning the space, tending to the fires, like it is so badass and such an expander. How did you get even just comfortable with nature and being outside to frolic and understand the rhythms of nature?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And you're helping me make a connection that I've never made before. Like hearing you talk about your own experience in the kitchen and similar to mine, I think one of the greatest lessons that I'm just now realizing in that way of like intuitive cooking is that it actually taught me how to trust myself and trust that instinctual knowledge, which connects me to sort of how I fell in love with cooking outside, and then more largely just being outside and understanding the importance of that, is because I think there is something still deep within our DNA, our ancestry, that when I cook over a fire, it feels like I want to revert back to this caveman talk of like fire good, you know, like there is just something primal that it just comes back to this place of, I know I'm doing something right for the good of myself, my body, and the people that I'm going to feed. I also love it because it goes against this idea that we need all these special equipments, that you need like the proper temperature, you know, like I love baking, and everyone talks about like that's, you know, that's mostly what I was trained in professional kitchens, was baking and pastry, and people are intimidated by the precision of it. And I love that cooking outside is sort of the antithesis to that, because there's so much that you cannot control. But speaking of like being centered and present and mindful, it is a process that you have to stay present to the entire time and continue to shift and manage the flames and adjust and readjust. And so I'm not thinking about anything else other than like what is actually happening right in front of me. And I love that. I love it so much. So there's parts of it that I just can't explain beyond there's something like deep within me that feels like, oh yeah, this is what I am made to be doing. And I just love that it just gets rid of this sort of like auxiliary fluff that we have, the gadgets that, you know, everyone's like, oh, you need to get this, you need to do this. It's like, no, you just need a good pan and fire and beautiful ingredients and you're good to go.
Yeah, I love this invitation to keep things simple, right? Like, yeah, we don't need the fanciest meat thermometer or the latest gadget of like, how can we actually just be present and build that trust with ourselves, with the ingredients, with the elements that are right in front of us. And I think that like cooking over fire helps us like remember patience in a way, right? Like we can't, right? What is the phrase? Like a watch pot never boils. I feel like cooking, and one of the reasons I love practicing like mindful cooking, is that it really helps be this mirror of like what's happening in my mind. So as I'm watching the pot boil, I realize, oh, there's agitation here because I'm impatient. Like I am noticing I want to control how fast this water is boiling and want to just kind of rush through it. And I can't make it go faster. And so it really invites me to be present with what is. And when I am, even if it's uncomfortable, like noticing the agitation, it's okay. And then it eventually kind of softens and I can navigate to what's next. I noticed in your bio, which is something fun to learn about you, is that you have done some, you know, wilderness training and connecting to the Center for Wild Spirituality and being in nature and forest as a therapy guide. What inspired you to bring that into your arsenal of practices within cooking and artistry career, I'll say?
Yeah. So like so many of us during the pandemic, I saw it as an invitation to like pause and, you know, reevaluate, assess, and because I was not able to bring people to the table, had time to say, okay, what else do I want to do? Or basically as all these things start, we could keep on coming back to this, but started as a curiosity, and I had the time to follow that curiosity. So I, at that point, had been working on this project, Kitchen Unnecessary, that I began with my brother, which is a online video series where we would connect with an expert guide who would teach us how to fish, forage, hunt, gather these wild ingredients, and then we would take it over a fire and cook an incredible feast. And in the process of making that show, that's where I really started to remember this deep connection to the natural world and started noticing how good I felt mentally, spiritually, physically, emotionally, all of that when I was outside. And kind of at the same time, there was this undercurrent of deconstructing the faith that I was brought up with, and still being deeply spiritual, but that expression of that opening up to an expanse and finding a lot of solace in the natural world. So I was curious about this. This is very different than, again, like I said, what I grew up with. And that was scary. It was scary for myself, my inner child. This is like going against my family, my ancestors, all these sorts of things. So I was seeking a safe space that I could bring these curiosities. And I found a program called Seminary of the Wild Earth through the Center for Wild Spirituality. And it was a year-long program that allowed me to do this like deep, deep personal work, kind of breaking down some foundational beliefs, rebuilding them, and all within the framework of the natural world being your primary guide in that. And it was all virtual. The program, of course, the invitations to spend as much time outside as possible was there. And I fell in love with that. I wouldn't say it's a particular belief system, but it's just something I deeply connected with and met a community of people that helped me sort of expand my voice in that and grow in confidence and more understanding of that initial curiosity. So much so that then I'm like, I always think it, like, I know Brené Brown would talk about the process of a artist or creator of like that inhale and exhale. And so this was a deep time of inhaling. And so then for me as an artist, the next step is then, okay, I want to share this with others. So after that program, I went through another training where I became a nature and forest therapy guide, which forest bathing is a practice that began in Japan when they started to, they were curious if there was more focused in a physiological benefit to spending time outdoors, where they would literally take someone's vitals before walking into the woods. And then at the end of the path, take their vitals again. And what they found was remarkable for how much benefit there is. The approach with the program that I studied with takes a bit more of a holistic approach. So it's not just focused on the physiological benefits, but the mental, spiritual as well. And in all of that learning, there was just this, you know, like curiosity of like, oh, does this, am I deviating from food? Do I still, is there still, am I done with that path? Or, and that's where kind of the idea for this, the Rooted Kitchen, my latest cookbook that was just released, was born from, because what I found is that my expression of this falling deeper in love with the natural world is to enjoy it with all of my senses, which also meant cooking with it and getting more curious about foraging and wild ingredients, including what I could just find outside right in my yard. As I'm saying, that I'm looking at my lilac tree that is just, the leaves are just starting to sprout, which is so incredible. I talk about my lilac tree a lot in the book. Use her flowers for some really delicious recipes.
Yeah. And it's early. My lilac tree too is blooming, and it's, I feel like, a few weeks early. So it's even just like interesting noticing the time of year, seasonal shifts, and staying present to like, oh, it's blooming, but this is like 3 weeks early for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes complete sense, your journey. And it feels, when you're sharing your connection to nature and our mental, emotional, spiritual, physiological benefits and food, like it feels so connected, because food for me, and most people, you know, is a form of medicine, and not just medicine for our cells, but like medicine for the heart. Like, I know a lot of the time I eat because I'm eating for my heart, like eating to connect to recipes of my mother who's passed away, or connecting to community, or that sense of care, or I'm eating through my eyes because of the colors or the stimulation. And so there's so much healing power in food that I wish for everybody to be able to connect with, because I know food can be a triggering relationship for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And of course, it's our food system in America is fucked up. And yeah. So like, you know, there's, it's complicated, but when you have access to fresh food and organic food, or are able to grow your food and be able to really sense the like richness in the seeds and watch it bloom and grow and notice how many like good vitamins are in it. And then your body absorbs those vitamins. And can you feel that? Like, I just get so jazzed about connecting to all of that. And I can feel that love and intentionality that you put into your recipes and put into your food. And it's just inspiring to hear where it comes from within your own creative process. I'm curious, do you have a favorite vegetable right now? Because I'm sure it shifts, but even just seasonally as we step into spring.
Yeah. Well, as you're saying all that so beautifully, I was thinking about how, what I think it's so cool as I've gotten to know like wild edibles. My favorite thing right now are nettles. And one thing that I love about them is, one, they're so accessible. They grow very abundantly and pretty much in nearly every part of the world you can find them. And to me, it's such a perfect example of how the earth cares for us by providing this plant, this wild medicine that provides us with essential like vitamins and nutrients that our body needs, particularly coming out of a bit of a winter hibernation, right? It's so loaded with vitamin C. It's like a natural cleansing. It's just like this perfect way of waking up our bodies. It's not this instant like shock to the system. It's just, I don't know. I just think of it as a big yawning, you know, and it's the first thing that really is popping up out of the ground and just greeting us into like this season that is, you know, just starting to flourish and grow and be abundant to by the time we get to August and September, and we're just overloaded with incredible goodness, but it just starts with simple wild green.
So I have seen many nettles out in the wild, and I always get terrified because they sting you.
Yeah.
What is your process of how to pick the nettle with respect? Because I hear even just this deep appreciation for nature and Mother Earth gifting us this vegetable at a season to wake our bodies up. And how do we even do that in a way that's caring, where as a human, we don't just come from like a taking place from Mother Nature?
Yeah, absolutely. Such a good question. And I love that, the intentionality, because I think that is incredibly important. And I think if one of the required reading for those curious about getting into foraging is reading Sweetgrass, I think it just helps to create this mindset of the reciprocal relationship that we have with the natural world. Because I do think that we tend to, in our culture, have this like human world, natural world, even with like beautiful delineations that are set up to help protect the natural world, stay on the path, leave no trace. Like, and again, I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't leave garbage in the woods, and absolutely. But I do think that some of these guidelines create this perception of nature being a museum, and we're there to just observe and not interact with. And what Robin Wall Kimmerer, who's the author of Braiding Sweetgrass, and many other particularly indigenous writers, or those who have more grown up with a belief system that is rooted in the interconnectedness of all, they speak about the natural world in a way that reminds us that we are nature, we are a part of it. And that our interacting together benefits the whole. So I think that's a huge, huge mindset shift, and one that really wasn't essential, that like I am not just out there just taking and reaping. I am actually like in partnership with the natural world. And I think with anything, like any relationship, knowing, the more I learn about a plant or fungi or animal, the more respect I have, the more love I have, the more appreciation. And so it can be super, super overwhelming. And there's lots of, you know, fear-based mindset around eating the wrong thing and where to go and where not to go and all of that, but like breaking it down into simple steps and maybe starting off with a couple of fairly common, accessible wild ingredients is a really, really great one to start with. There are a few nettle recipes in my book. There's a whole like nettle spotlight section because I do think nettles is just such a really, really, I always say it's like the gateway to foraging. Yes, it does sting you. Some people aren't as, don't feel the effects as much. I do. I feel it. I'm like, I'm itchy for at, like a full 24 hours. Even still, I don't wear gloves. I don't, I should, but I usually go in with scissors and I make the snip and then use the scissors like a tongs. That's always my approach. And then bring a bag or a basket with a very wide opening so I'm not stinging myself while putting them in. And then the, you know, there are people who like ask the plants for permission, which I think is a beautiful practice. And I try and do that, remember to do that as well. Show appreciation, never take, you know, never clear out a spot, always leave some for others and the other animals. And like going in with that approach, which I will say is an absolute relearning for our culture that is, has a lot of beliefs rooted in scarcity mindset, greed, you know, the consumerism of like, oh, I found this, it's all mine, I'm going to take it and then sell it to this person over here. And so it is this like, it's a, this kind of continual friction of working against that mindset that is so abundant in our culture. And trying to shift my own mindset of learning from the natural world that is much more in communion, harmony. Everything is interconnected and working together. And
yeah, when you slow down to connect to the rhythm of nature, you can totally feel this different heartbeat than we're functioning at in our capitalistic, technology heavy, busy, full lives. And it's a juxtaposition. It's hard to hold. It's kind of like this concept of being centered in our city, like that I like to play with, because it's like, how do we connect to nature around us and inside of us and also live these modern lives? And that dance between it all, I think, is such a balance to just be noticing and paying attention to. I love what you shared around asking for permission to take and also taking that moment of gratitude. I try to do that when I'm cooking, like as I'm washing vegetables or roasting a chicken, to thank the animal, to thank the vegetables, to thank the farmers, like really to expand, even if I'm purchasing these ingredients from a supermarket, to expand the consciousness of all of the hands and the earth that still grew this living thing that gets to then offer me nourishment and offer my family, my loved ones nourishment.
Yeah.
So taking that time to just acknowledge, I think, can be really helpful in creating that interconnected piece that you were highlighting for us. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for sharing your heart and your creativity and your wisdom and your insights with us on the podcast today. Where can listeners learn more about your books, especially Rooted Kitchen, and just find out more information about you?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I always appreciate the dialogue and getting to open up more about sort of the heart and soul behind it. People can find me on Instagram, Ashrod. My website is ashrod.earth, and Rooted Kitchen is out and available wherever books are sold.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Centered in the City. I am so curious to hear how your mouth might be watering, your belly might be grumbling, maybe even just noticing thoughts or memories around food that feel meaningful to you. Feel free to join Ashley and I on Instagram and we can continue the conversation. Also, if you are somebody who's deeply interested in connecting to your own nature and being in nature, I invite you to join me on a solstice silent meditation retreat happening June 21st to the 23rd on Whidbey Island. This is an opportunity to untangle ourselves from the busyness of life, the loudness of all of our technologies and dings and pings, and to come get centered in nature, to slow down and really connect to ourselves and an amazing group of like-minded people while eating delicious food and connecting to our senses. So if this speaks to your heart, I welcome you to head on over to the show notes and click the link to sign up for the wait list and learn more about how to apply. There are limited spots available and applications will open early April. Thanks for being here as always, and until next time, stay centered.